looking good. Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased. And dropped to the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
Hit the ring. Steve-O's got him up. A slam.
Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood, or on Instagram, igjhood. So glad you're with us here after Notre Dame puts a whooping on Chicago State. Kind of knew that was going to happen. A new program at Chicago State and Notre Dame winning the first couple games of the season against USC and Chicago State. So glad that you are in with us. And keep that phone number in mind. You'll need it tonight, 312-332-ESPN. Coming up at 9:15, we'll hear from Nick Friedel, who covers the Bulls, the NBA, the Warriors, everything else around the league. We'll hear from him coming up at 9:15. The Warriors are playing the Bucks, two of the best teams in the NBA. So we'll talk to Nick about that coming up at 9:15, right before the Warriors and the Bucks are going to tip it off at Oracle Arena. So glad that you're in. There's a number of things that's on my mind. I was off yesterday because I was working with the Windy City Bulls. For those that don't know, I've been doing some play-by-play commentary with the Windy City Bulls for this year as part of Illinois Media School and Sportstown Chicago, so having fun with that. So I was off yesterday, but I saw the news when it came in about Joel Quenneville. And I figure if I'm going to talk about the Blackhawks, let's do it right after Notre Dame. If we're going to do it, let's do it now. Because the one thing I do know about Chicago Blackhawks hockey is that it does not rate well. It does not resonate with the majority of the audience. I do recall those three championships, those three Stanley Cups, and knowing that, hey, this is a big moment, especially when you have multiple championships. But for some reason, it just doesn't seem to resonate with the rest of the city. I won't be one to tell you that there's only 20,000 Blackhawks fans in the city, because I know there's more than that. But as far as the city getting behind the Blackhawks, you know, away from the Stanley Cup championships, I think that's weird. Like, Sean worked at GN during a couple of those championships, and he knew, you know, the importance of Blackhawks fans and how they would, you know, go to that station to listen to Blackhawks hockey and people getting into it. But, you know, I remember doing a lot of those post games, you know, and just like it just, for whatever reason, it just does not seem to resonate with everyone when it comes to Blackhawks. But I'm going to say this. And every time that we talk about championships in our city, right, every time we talk about championships, I always bring up Joel Quenneville's name. Anytime that we have a topic of great coaches or championships in town, I always bring up Joel Quenneville's name, because you'd be dumb not to. You don't just sidestep hockey, because a championship for a major sport is a championship. And the first time I saw the news come across about Joel Quenneville, I immediately thought about Ditka at the end. I'm old enough to remember Ditka at the end. See, when Mike Ditka was the head coach for the Bears, he comes in as a former Bear, the blessing from George Halas, special teams guy, tight end coach, or whatever he was. But you didn't know what kind of head coach he'd be. You just know that he was a tough-nosed player, but you didn't know what kind of head coach he would be. You saw him as a position coach, but didn't know what kind of head coach he'd be. And so he comes in, and the team turns around immediately. And in the 80s, mid-80s, obviously, we're talking about some of the greatest defenses that the NFL's ever seen. Buddy Ryan's a big part of that. And an offense that was strong enough to be able to keep the Bears in ball games. But the point is that Ditka's personality and that championship means so much that he's got restaurants all over this country, including here in Chicago. Because that championship and that special team and those personalities, Ditka was the head cashew with all those nuts with the Chicago Bears. Those crazy Chicago Bears teams in the past that Ditka presided over. And I thought, man, they should have been able to win more than one championship. The point is that one championship still matters in this city to the point where people will go from here to Pittsburgh or to Florida or other places just to go to Ditka's restaurants, just to be around the coach, just be around that personality. So the one championship and the dominance of the Bears still means something today in 2018. Now we look at Joel Quenneville with the Blackhawks, right? And I'm not going to compare the Blackhawks to the Bears, but I will look at the championships and what has gone on in the city because nobody's had more championships than the Blackhawks. You take a look in recent memory of those three Stanley Cup championships and Joel Quenneville, who I have had a relationship with, by the way, with Joel Quenneville. I think that he was a very interesting personality. I don't know if he ever was real comfortable in the city, especially after the second championship. But I still will look at Joel Quenneville's tenure here as a head coach as a great one. Think about it. Three Stanley Cup championships. Come on now. And the Blackhawks brass show him the door. Can you believe that? That is so Chicago, it's just not even funny. As we talk about this with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, but I got to bring it out now while we have some time after Notre Dame basketball. I got to bring it up now because you think about the disconnect. And here, I'm just not going to speak for the host. I'll just talk about me because sometimes you'll be able to get a text here, an email there, and it's kind of given information about what is going on with the team. And I heard before the season ended last year and into this season that there was a disconnect between the Bowmans and Joel Quenneville. Now, you know, with three championships that were won by the Blackhawks, that things weren't going to last forever. However, you still had a core in place to be able to get back to the mountaintop again. There are some that are closer to hockey than I am that would say the Hawks are not a playoff team this year. I don't know. I don't know. I just, maybe they are, maybe they're not. I don't know. All I know is that you have a core in place in which if you feel like you're not going to be one of the top teams in the conference, you can still build around the core that's still there. You don't trade off Taves and Kane and some of the quality players that got you to a championship. Not right now. You don't have to do that. See, I think hockey's different than, say, basketball or baseball. You don't have to necessarily go all the way to the bottom and just trade all your assets. You don't have to do that. And quite frankly, I don't know if I would trust the Blackhawks to do that now anyway. And maybe that's where they're headed. I don't know. I cover them. I read about them. But I know you don't want me to talk about it, so I don't talk about it. I care about my ratings. So I don't know. I know you're not interested in it. But since Quenneville got fired, I do want to bring this up. Because I thought that Mark Lazarus had a really good piece from TheAthletic.com because Lazarus is all over the Blackhawks beat. And the piece was entitled Fall Guy, Joel Quenneville Takes the Heat for Stan Bowman's Roster Decisions. Now, I'm not going to go through the entire column, but I think it's a very compelling read. If you missed it the last couple of days, you should take a look because it's a great breakdown of egos. That's a great breakdown of egos. The Blackhawks fired their second winningest coach in NHL history on Tuesday, Joel Quenneville, after the best 10-year stretch in the history of the franchise. It is as unthinkable as it is inevitable, the end of a power struggle that has lasted more than 6 years. And if you have any doubts about that, just look at whom the Blackhawks have named an assistant coach in the wake of firing of Quenneville, and along with his top lieutenants, Kevin Dineen and Ulf Samuelsson. Barry Smith. Now, it goes down and talks about how Smith, if you remember, who was foisted upon Quenneville during the 11-12 season, against his wishes, ordered by Bowman to join Quenneville on the ice to work with the anemic power play. And it goes on to talk about how one of the best friends that Quenneville has in hockey was let go, and Quenneville didn't like that, and it was insisted upon him to be able to bring on Barry Smith. That sounds familiar. Ah, I know what it was. When my favorite hockey player of all time, Dennis Savard, was the head coach, and the Blackhawks said, yeah, we got this old North Star here. We got this old coach. He's just going to scout. He's not doing anything. He's just in the stands scouting. Don't worry, Denny. Everything's going to be fine. That scout and that former coach became the head coach of the Blackhawks. It happens every time. It happens in business. It happens in broadcasting. It happens in sports. It happens in every walk of life where there's someone over your shoulder, and someone over your shoulder is going to replace you. And in this spot, it's the minor league coach that comes in for Joel Quenneville and Barry Smith, who was around. Barry Smith, he said, hey, you know, Barry Smith's got to be part of this coaching staff. And Quenneville said no, and you saw the power struggle. So the number one question I ask is why? Why did the Blackhawks do this? Three Stanley Cup championships. The Hawks fired Joel Quenneville because of ego? Was it because of roster turnover? Was it because of ego? Was it because of no playoffs last year? Was it because of ego? Was it because of Stan Bowman? Was it because of ego? Was it because of John McDonough? Was it because of ego? Was it because of ego? Was it because of ego? It's amazing that after all the championships and the parades, and people embracing the organization, by the way, same organization that nobody even wanted to come close to the United Center to see the Blackhawks before John McDonough got there and before you started seeing fruit on the vine for the Blackhawks. And just like Ditka, when his time was up, Quenneville, because of ego from the Bowmans, from the front office, they said, no, you know what? The reason why these Stanley Cup championships happen is because of us. It's because of Stan Bowman. Because of Scotty Bowman. That's a shame. But, you know, it's like anything else in sports. This is not the only example of it. I mean, we can go local. We can go national with this. We mentioned Ditka when his end was coming. We could talk about why Jimmy Johnson was shown the door after two championships with the Cowboys. And the Cowboys have not been able to survive since. They have not been able to relive those great moments since because of ego. And I don't get that. If something is working, then maybe you should stick with what's working. If nothing else, the Blackhawks can look at themselves. And again, they really do not rate very well in this city still after three championships, because everyone's focused on the Cubs. Everyone's focused on the Bears. This will always be a Bears town. But even after three championships, they could always say, we're the organization that's got the gold. We've got the championships. And because of that, Joel Quenneville was part of that. But yet you show him the door because of ego. Oh, absolutely. Because of ego. Jerry Krause, the same guy, the late Jerry Krause, with the Chicago Bulls, said, organizations win championships. Players don't win championships. Organizations win championships. Why did he say that? It's because of ego. Don't you realize that if you win and you're a part of the reason that you win, that everybody wins? Why does it have to come down to, well, if I separate this coach out of the equation, then it makes us shine? No, it's a negative, actually. They went from having the white hats. Think about all the teams in the city. The Blackhawks had the white hats. Nobody could touch them. Nobody could touch them. Nobody said anything in a negative way about the Blackhawks for years. Thank you, Rocky Wirtz, for that. Little home TV. Butts in seats, fast cars, fast women, everybody going to the United Center, right? Because it was the trendy place to go. Like, that's the spot in the fall and winter and spring. You're seeing young players out there. Everybody is about it, and everybody's there. It's like the hot new club, three championships. Everybody's got a butt in every seat at the United Center. And guess what? Now, because the Hawks didn't get to the playoffs last year, and maybe it looks like a playoff team, maybe it doesn't, now you got to be able to point the blame at the guy with the mustache. Now you got to point the blame at Joel Quenneville, and it's wrong. Figure it out. That's how you do that. You figure it out. You come to a consensus and say, as a man, to man, hey, I don't like how you do this. I'd rather for you to do that. Or I'll go with what you're saying because you're the guy that led us to 3 championships, but I'd really like for you to do this. It's just communication. Communication is so poor. And Stan Bowman came across as saying like, oh, well, you know, I don't have any understanding why people say that we have a disconnect and that we didn't like each other personally. Because that's you didn't like each other personally because that's all we heard. All we heard is that you didn't like each other personally. You know why? Because of ego. Ego. We all have it. But you also have to understand in a winning situation, you have to allow others to be able to breathe and shine. Everybody shines together when you win. And just because things are not working out well right now doesn't mean that that couldn't have continued. They fired a great coach in Joel Quenneville. 3 championships. And for what? Because Stan Bowman could not stand being the guy that was on the outside looking in. Couldn't take it. Good luck being in obscurity.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so good.
On ESPN 1000.
You're listening to my mans and them, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Well, Tales from the Hood coming up at 9:35 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So glad that you're in. By the way, are you familiar with the Under the Hood podcast? Have you heard about this? Have you seen this? Have you heard about the Under the Hood podcast? So I have my own podcast where you can hear every episode of our program. We know that you're busy. You got stuff going on with the kids. You got stuff going on with your boo, your side piece, your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, right? But so you may not get a chance to listen live weeknights between 7 and 10 here on ESPN 1000. So that's why we've got our podcast. So whether it's on iTunes, Apple Music, whether it is on SoundCloud, whether it's the TuneIn app, just look for the Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood podcast. If you look for just Under the Hood, you'll get something different. And I don't want you to look for something different. Look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. That's where you can find my podcast. That way you can never miss an episode and great features as well. Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. Value Bet with Joe Ostrowski. Just recorded one with him today. He's so enamored with his 5-1 mark he had last week. So he's on cloud 9. So you get all the best plays in college and pro football. And so much other content as well on the Under the Hood podcast. If you subscribe and you download, you'll never miss an episode Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. All right, coming up, we'll hear from Nick Friedel, who covers the Bulls for ESPN. So the Bulls in the NBA. I'm so used to saying that. God almighty. He covers the Bulls, the Wizards, the Bucks, the Clippers, the Portland Trail Blazers. That's a bad habit. He covers the NBA/Warriors for ESPN.com. I've said that for like 9 or 10 years. I can't get that out of my lexicon there. But yes, he covers the NBA for ESPN.com. Our buddy Nick Friedel, we'll hear from him coming about 9:15 right here on ESPN 1000. He'll be covering the Warriors and the Bucks. Interesting, this Bucks team. Fear the deer. This Bucks team, with Giannis Antetokounmpo, a terrific young player, an MVP candidate. If you're a Bucks fan, you need to spend some time going to those games. I am just amazed at how you go to a Bucks game and how many empty seats there are in some home games. Now, maybe that's picked up a little bit because of the new stadium. But man, there's some times where you go to a Bucks game, you see those empty seats. Even though it's a Packers.
I think anytime.
You know it's a Packers crowd. Man, you still have to. Hold on, Nagy. You'll get your time. You still should be able to go see really a terrific superstar in Giannis Antetokounmpo. All right, coming up, I'll talk a little bit about the Chicago Bears as Nagy tried to get in on my show. We will talk about the Bears they take on the Lions, and that's coming up here on UTH.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's a blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Donna goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling, 25-20. Got a block for Brown. 50, 10, 5. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Don't win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Trubisky's going to run it. And he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
In the ring. Steamboat's got him up. A slam. The player inside Crane, 1-2. He made it. He did it. Steamboat's like purple. And Flair has done it. Flair has done it.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, what's up? And welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. On Instagram, hit me up on the gram, IGJHood. We'll hear from Nick Friedel, who covers the NBA for ESPN.com. We'll talk to him coming up at 9:15 here on ESPN 1000. Also, we'll do Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. You know what I was going to do, guys, because if you're just joining us, thank you for joining us, number one. And number two, we had Notre Dame basketball, and so we got an abbreviated show tonight. I was going to do a Throwback Thursday. But like, but if I do Throwback Thursday, then the whole show hasn't had any sports in it. because it would have been one Blackhawks topic, Throwback Thursday and Tales. Now, one of these days, like in the dead of winter in February, we will do that. I still promise the audience I will do a three-hour Tales from the Hood. We will do that. We are going to do a three-hour Tales from the Hood, which is going to be tremendous. It's a short show. I guess if I was going to do it, I could have did it tonight, too. But listen, I want to give you a little sports rule. For goodness sakes, I want to throw in some sports.
That all Tales of the Hood show is going to have to be a really focused, don't lose our jobs kind of show.
Yeah. The title of the show, pardon the expression, for three hours. I mean, seriously, that's going to happen. I've been saying this for a while, but then that old sports thing gets in the way. You know, as I there's news and the topics and stuff. But one day we're going to do a three-hour Tales from the Hood. It's just going to just be news of the weird, just over and over. It's like the whole thing for 3 hours. We're going to do that when we get a nice lull, when it's a nice snow that's happening in February and there's nothing going on besides dull Blackhawks hockey and bad Bulls basketball. We'll get into that. We'll do that. I promise we will do that. As long as I have the chair, I will bring a 3 hour Tales from the Hood, which is going to be tremendous. We got to plan it, and we got to do all kind of like production around it, but it's going to be something. It'll be great. Management won't know anything about it, but we definitely will do it, though.
Numbers are up. What happened? What happened? The show. Good, good, good.
Yeah. No sports. I want to get into the Bears if we could, because that is sports, before we hear from Nick on the NBA. You know, I mentioned this on our Bear Down Monday show. You can go back in the archives and find our Bear Down Monday show that we did after the Bears defeated the Bills. And one of the things that I was talking about is how some are not giving the Bears credit for their 5-3 mark, and that they look at the 5-3 as if it's college football, like you're trying to figure out whether or not the Bears are good enough to be in the Peach Bowl or the Rose Bowl or be in the Final Four. That's not, I don't think you look at that as far as the NFL, because it's not college football. It's the NFL. It's so hard to win every week. I thought that Kevin Fishbane, friend of the program, did a nice breakdown from The Athletic talking about the Bears. Right here now, we're in midseason, right? So Bears midseason review, position coaches assess key players after 8 games. And some things that I highlighted that really stood out to me from a number standpoint. Everything in the NFL is hinged around whether or not the quarterback can help you get to where you want to be in this offensive league. You know it's about offense. You know it's about the quarterback. So that's the whole key, right? So he gives these numbers about Mitch Trubisky. He says that the numbers are overall positive for the second-year quarterback. 16 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, a passer rating of 96.1 on your dial, and 302 rushing yards. His completion percentage is 64.2. It can improve, but it's also 4.8 points better than last year. Now, I want to make sure it's clear from this show, from Under the Hood, when I tell you that I don't grade Mitch Trubisky on a curve. What I do is I talk about Trubisky based on game in and game out. Now, that doesn't necessarily have a full grade yet of he's a B-plus quarterback, he's a C-minus quarterback, because it's still a process. I get that. It's so difficult, as you know, to develop quarterbacks in the league. I'm only being fair. For once, I'm not doing the meatball thing and saying, after game one against the Packers, he couldn't turn it around, the guy sucks. I'm not doing that. Because I'm having an adult conversation about a very serious matter when it comes to the Bears. An adult conversation about how a quarterback is trying to develop. And so when I see those numbers of 16 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, what it tells me is that Trubisky still has a long way to go. Still a long way to go. Not the finished product, because I will tell you this. If the season stopped today, if it was an 8-game season, oh man. If the season stopped today for the Bears, and that's what Trubisky can do, that's not good enough. You know it's not good enough, and I know it's not either. Even the Trubisky truthers have to know that there's room for improvement. The entire team needs improvement. But, again, the accelerated pace that this Bears team is going on and looking at the division of the NFC North tells you that there's some good things, more good things than bad things with this Bears team. Mr. Trubisky talking about the Bears defense, because that's the next opponent for the Bears. What does he see from the Lions defense on film?
They cause a lot of havoc up front. They keep it in front, and they've had some games where they're shutting them out, some games where they're letting up some points, and it can go either way. So I think we just got to focus on what we got to do this week. There's not a bunch of confusing looks as far as scheme goes, but they are going to try to confuse you with disguises, lining guys up in different spots, bringing different personnels in, and just trying to disguise coverage to make it hard on the quarterback and for the receivers to recognize coverage. So it's going to be huge for our film study this week and our preparation. And I think if we just focus on what we got to do and focus on our plays, that we'll be just fine recognizing that thing on the thing and make them adjust to us instead of us adjusting to them.
What thing on the thing? What is he talking about? Anyway, just ignore him. Just talking. Just stream of consciousness. Anyway. I'll ask you this question, Eric and Sean, who are producing the show, before I play this next soundbite, because maybe I'm just in the dark. Of course, I'm in the dark. But I just don't know, okay? Is there been an overwhelming amount of criticism on Mitch Trubisky that you've heard, whether it's in the street or on this radio station? Have you heard like an overwhelming amount of criticism of Trubisky? I'll start with you, Eric.
I really haven't. And the ones that are negative are... we're just not sure yet. No one, not too many people are like, he's trash. You've heard one guy, Michael Lombardi, from The Ringer go off on him, and there was so much outrage that he went off on him that bad. So I think more people got upset that someone went at Trubisky saying he's trash already when we really don't know.
Sean, what are the streets saying about Trubisky?
Basically, everybody is pretty much saying the same thing. I think Lewis Riddick kind of stepped out today and wants him to take the next step. Yeah, you make the great plays with your legs. You make some great throws down the field. But can you just continue to make the simple plays that all quarterbacks should make? That's not much to ask from a quarterback that's supposed to be your franchise quarterback. So when Lewis Riddick said that, I think that might have ruffled some feathers, because people want to have this cautious approach to Mitch, to saying, well, this is really his first year in the system. He has a new coach. His first time working with a coach that can actually teach him. And all of these excuses. Look, if you can throw the football naturally, that's something that comes natural to great quarterbacks.
Are those excuses or reasons?
Excuses in my book.
Well, please explain.
Yeah,
since the mics are open, you might as well go ahead and explain.
When you start talking about someone first time being matched up. I'll give you a perfect example. Name me the great offensive mind that Cam Newton has had.
Right.
Or the great offensive coach. But no one uses that excuse. They always point to he doesn't complete the ball. He's not a complete from the pocket quarterback. All he does is use his legs. That sounds like Mitch Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to Mitch, now you want to start talking about the components that he's had to work with and to be able to mold him as a quarterback. You can't have it both ways. So either a guy is a quarterback that can produce or he's not.
So you're saying that my analysis is not fair? Or you think it's too light, my analysis of Trubisky?
You could be a little bit more heavy-handed.
I don't. Here's why that I'm not, is because I didn't expect anything. See, here's
really? Even when they drafted him?
No. Why would I expect something from, first of all, what are you going to expect from John Fox as the head coach to start with?
Yeah.
With that JV offense? So I mean, again, when we look at Trubisky, too many people are looking at him like he should be Pat Mahomes. That's not fair.
Not at all.
So what I'm saying is that with Trubisky, every week, every Monday, I'm analyzing week by week how the offense looks. And I talk about the good and the bad. Now, maybe I have too much nuance in my conversation, but here's the thing. When you don't expect anything from the Bears and your base is Mike Glennon, and then he's doing obviously better than Mike Glennon and doing better than Mark Sanchez or doing better than the bottom of the league quarterbacks that we've seen in here for a while, then I have to be cautiously optimistic and not to the point where I have pom-poms for Mitch Trubisky, because I'm never that. But I think it's fair for this quarterback or any other young quarterback, whether it's Sam Darnold or Rosen or anybody else, to look game by game, look at a full season and find out whether or not the quarterback could play or not. Because I just don't think through eight games with this regime, I could tell you that Mitch Trubisky will never be a great quarterback or never be a good quarterback. I think that, tell me if that's unfair.
No, I think that's very fair.
That's all. So I could be, I'll put it this way. The last game against the Bills, numbers are underwhelming against a bad team. Mentioned that. Jets should be better. No question it should be better than that. But then one thing I've also criticized is that the use of his legs, if that seems like his first go-to versus being able to make others better. They got to make him better, and he's got to make them better as well. But when I look at the Bears and thinking that they were going to be a 7-9 ball club at best in the basement, and they're 5-3. And again, the defense and the offense are being able to do just enough to win ball games. I will say that's a good thing. So I don't measure Trubisky on a curve. When he's playing underwhelming football like we've seen the last couple of weeks, we mention it. But remember the measuring stick. The measuring stick was Glennon, because if Glennon could at least keep the offense rolling to about a 5-11, 6-10 clip, we wouldn't have even seen Trubisky last year. Because it was his job. Remember that now. That's Glennon's job. But he sucked. So he threw the kid in. And so,
don't you think Bears fans kind of have this feeling that even though they might think otherwise, there might be a percentage of Bears fans that wanted the other two quarterbacks in that draft. But they're just saying, this is my quarterback. This is my guy. Get off of my guy.
Oh, that, you hear a lot of that. That's for sure. Remember when I said the draft now, go back to the archives, saw him at North Carolina and didn't understand the love. Go back now to what I'm saying. This is not brand new. I said this at the time. I said, why did going up in the draft for him? 13, 14 games in college. He didn't wow anybody in North Carolina. But McCaskey had to have his quarterback. Woof, woof. So Sean's talking about Louis Riddick. And talking about the accuracy, which I think is fair.
I don't know. I've been very upfront. He's got to be better.
Yeah.
You got to start hitting those throws. Is he going to be like Jared? Is he going to be like Pat? I don't know. You know what? My instinct tells me no, he won't. He won't be at their level. My instinct also tells me is he's going to need good coaching. He's going to need good play calling. He's going to need a positive environment, a very constructive, environment around him, very good players around him, to where he can give you competent performance, so much so that He can win football games for you and not lose football games for you, but the rest of the team is going to make, is going to definitely have to carry its share of the load. I think that's the kind of quarterback he's going to ultimately end up being for you as a football team, and you can win with that guy. But it puts the onus on a lot of other parts of your organization.
The reason why I even asked you, Eric and Sean, about that is because of someone asking Nagy in the press conference yesterday about constant criticism of Trubisky.
I think anytime you are drafted as a quarterback early and high in the draft, you're always going to be critiqued. But again, the only thing that he needs to worry about is what I think about him and what people in this building think about him. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and that's okay. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But as long as he just understands that the only thing that matters is what we think, then nothing will affect him.
Okay, good answer. Keep it in-house. Do what you got to do. You're listening to ESPN 1000, the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Glad you're with us here on this Thursday night. We turn to Nick Friedell, standing by or at Oracle Arena as the Golden State Warriors get ready to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. He joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Nick, as always, I appreciate your time as the Warriors get ready to take on Milwaukee. Let's start off talking a little bit about Fear the Deer with Giannis Antetokounmpo. So where do you place Giannis amongst the MVP candidates this year?
Well, Hoodie, Giannis is incredible. I mean, he's an unbelievable talent. I was listening to Steph Curry yesterday, and he's saying that Giannis is unique just because of how many different things he can do well at that size. Having said that, could Giannis win the MVP this season? Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm at all. I just don't believe that his game is to a point where everything is at the highest place it could be. I think he's still probably a year away, maybe two. He's going to win the award. There's not a doubt in my mind there. I just don't believe it'll happen this quickly. But as far as his ability to adjust within Budenholzer's system and what he's been able to do so far through this season, he's been awesome. And I don't think there's any doubt when you talk to people around the league that they know he's going to get that much better, and that's the scariest part for the rest of the NBA.
Got some thoughts about the Warriors that I want you to address. So when you look at the Golden State Warriors, are they like Alabama in this regard, that kind of dominance in the West? Because, as you know, in college football, it's Alabama and just kind of like the rest of the teams. That's no shot at Georgia or Clemson or Notre Dame. It's just that you see the ability of Alabama. I'm wondering, do you see that kind of separation with the Warriors in the West?
Yes. Yes, and I know where you're going, and I agree with you. I think that they are that much better than everybody else when they want to play and they're engaged in that night's game. Nobody, Hoodie, no one, nobody in the West, nobody in the East, nobody is beating this team this year if they're healthy and they want to play. It's just not going to happen. They have way too much talent. That's the same way I feel when I watch Alabama, when they are engaged and everything is rolling system-wise for them, they're untouchable. So, yeah, I think that Golden State this year is so head and shoulders above everyone else, on top of the fact that DeMarcus Cousins is going to come back at some point in the next few months, and will give him even that much more of an advantage. So, yes, I think that is an apt comparison for where Golden State is at the moment. And I think that's why they are so comfortable and confident in where they are and what they're doing so far throughout this season.
What have you noticed about the infrastructure of Golden State since you've been there as far as management, Steve Kerr, the players? What has stood out to you most about how they go about their business?
The biggest thing is I've never seen a more accessible team in pro sports. Hmm. And I mean that for what we do from a media standpoint, Hoodie. They're available, they're engaging, they have personalities that aren't afraid to say what's on their mind. But for a team that is as dominant and as talented and has had as much success as they've had, I have never seen a group that enjoys being in that media spotlight. Maybe enjoys is too strong, but I'd say knows how to handle it. And that's from top down. That's from ownership, Joe Lacob and his group. Steve Kerr, Bob Myers, Raven Ritter, who runs their PR department. The players are all on board. They know they have a product, and they know how they want to sell that product. And the winning, of course, helps make everything go. But the fact that they're able to continue to be as transparent in that fashion as they are is unbelievable to me, given the success that they've already had.
Nick Friel covers the NBA for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So what's going to happen with this Wizard situation? I know it's early in the season, but as you and I have talked about over the years regarding Wall and Beal, they're both very talented. But you saw kind of the rubber meeting the road when there was an issue with Wall and Gortat, and Gortat was the one that had to leave. But there's a lot of money tied up into those two along with Otto Porter. I'm just wondering, like, who leaves first, Scott Brooks or one of those two players?
Man, that whole thing is a basketball disaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Wizards are at the moment. If it's me, Hoodie, you can't trade John Wall. I mean, nobody's taken that contract. The max deal hadn't even kicked in yet. You can try to trade Bradley Beal. I think that he is probably your best chip at the moment, but they have got to press the button. The fact that they came into this season still hoping that this group and this core could work together, that's on them. So who goes first? I like Scott Brooks. I think he's a solid coach, but maybe he just doesn't fit in that situation. But I'm not sure who would. I mean, that roster just is not good enough for what they've been trying to do the last few seasons. Who makes the first move? I don't know, but it's time to make a move. Because status quo in D.C. with that group, it's not good enough, and it hadn't been for a while now.
I think that you and I both knew the expectations for the Lakers coming into the season, where it wasn't necessarily about this year, it's about next year, if Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka can be able to land the big fish, right? So all of a sudden, the Lakers get off to not necessarily an awful start, but just a little bit of a slow start as they try to figure out one another, and there's panic in the streets. Like, oh, well, now there's a problem with Luke Walton. Now there's a problem with the team. Like, look, I mean, they didn't guard last year, and they're guarding this year. I mean, and so, it's amazing how all of a sudden you accelerate the issue with your basketball team when really it's about next year. So I want to ask, do you see a correlation in LeBron's relationship with Luke Walton as it was with Eric Spoelstra and Ty Lue? Is that an issue?
Oof, I think the difference to me, Hoodie, is Eric Spoelstra had the backing of Pat Riley. And so as much as LeBron may not have liked Spoelstra in the very beginning, Riley was standing right behind him saying, hey, he's not going anywhere. Ty Lue had a different relationship with LeBron. And, of course, you got to remember in the Cleveland situation, he was replacing David Blatt, who – when you talk to the people that are around that team on a daily basis, just didn't seem like he had control of that situation. As far as Luke Walton goes, I mean, Magic Johnson, that was not his hand-picked guy. So if you're Luke Walton, I think there's enough writing on the wall where you kind of go, all right, what is my long-term future here? And then I know what Magic has said in the last few days, but if they get into any more problems, yeah, it would seem that he would be the scapegoat. And it would seem that they would go to LeBron and say, who are you most comfortable with moving forward? There's always going to be more of a spotlight on any LeBron team, even more so now in Los Angeles. I think that the issue is the roster. Just when you look at what he needs around him, it's just not good enough. And so, again, you know, we're talking about Scott Brooks and who's the fall guy in D.C. and the coach is always going to be the fall guy in almost every situation unless you have massive backing from the front office. And, you know, reading between the lines in L.A., I've just never felt like Luke Walton with Pelinka and with Magic has that kind of backing with the group.
You mentioned a basketball disaster earlier. Have you been keeping an eye on the Bulls lately?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, we're going into scapegoats and, you know, who gets fired first? Yes, I've kept an eye on the box scores and the records, and I'm still getting plenty of texts from old friends in Chicago. It's not looking so hot there, huh?
Well, you know, here's the thing. it's what you've been saying for years now, that Fred's not going to last his contract. I'm just wondering, will it be a Christmas exit? And here's the thing. Here's what I said. I said this last week. It's best for Fred, Nick. It's best for Fred, his health, his family. Just let him out of this deal. Just let him go.
Right.
Just eat the remainder of the contract. Where are you going anyway? You know you want to blame him anyway, and he's never had a roster that he can really work with and work whatever system he wants to work anyway. So just let it go and just move on to whatever the next thing is with Chicago.
Well, the issue there, Hoodie, is that Fred is such a competitive guy that I think that would be a struggle for him to just walk away, even if it might be best for everybody involved. I mean, the stunning part would be if Fred, of course, is back start next season. I don't believe anybody expects that at this point, but with the way things are going, you'd think that a change would come at some point. Although if you're the Bulls, you can always fall back on they've had a ton of injuries, because they've had a ton of injuries, and you want to see if the team works well together. I think you and I both agree that no matter who comes back, right now it'll be a struggle, even if they were completely healthy. But you feel for Fred. He's a really nice guy. Just 4 years later, you're still not sure what the identity of the group is. And I've never gotten the sense, Hoodie, that Fred has really found his footing within that locker room on a day-to-day basis. And so there will be people that say he never had a fair chance. He never had the roster he needed. There'll be other people that say it doesn't matter what the roster is. You should get the most out of what you got. It just didn't work for Fred in Chicago, and whether it comes in December or February or after the season, Fred is not going to be the coach of the Bulls unless there is some kind of stunning turnaround here in the next few months.
Lastly, you mentioned, you reported that you won't see a Draymond Green or Sean Livingston in this contest. And just like Noah's Ark, the Warriors have, you know, two of everything, so this won't be a major issue, but those two are out for tonight, right?
They are out. Andre Iguodala, who sat out the other night for resting purposes, he's back in. Steve Kerr isn't worried that the Draymond issue, the toe issue, is long term. But Hoodie, this is why the Warriors are the Warriors. They don't need anybody. they can go without a star, couple stars for a while. It's all about getting ready for the postseason, and this is why they've had the high level of success that they've had over the last couple of years.
My friend, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
You got it, my man. See ya.
It's Nick Friedell, who covers the NBA for ESPN.com, joining us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, J. Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude.
What do you got there?
This is your car?
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app is brought to you by the fine folks at Northwestern Basketball, Chicago's Big Ten team. Coach Collins and the Northwestern basketball team return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena this winter. Season and single game tickets are on sale. NUSports.com, NUSports.com for tickets. Tales from the Hood is stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. You never know what you'll get with Tales from the Hood. By the way, coming up on Saturday, Chicago's College Tailgate. Did you know ESPN 1000 has a college football show? I know. No one told you. But let me be the one to tell you, we have a college football show before every Notre Dame football game. Adam Abdallah, Chris Black, and yours truly. We host the show, and we're going to be on the road this Saturday. It's been on the social media, but in case you didn't hear, you have not heard, we'll be at the Kankakee Grill at Four Winds Casino, South Bend. And when you go in there, you take a whiff. Man, brand new. Yeah, because it is brand new. It's a beautiful place. So let me just call it out right now before we go into Tales from the Hood. If you're listening to this show in New Buffalo, in Michigan City, in Long Beach, McCall the Row, Davis, in Elkhart, in Bristol, in Lakeville, If you're listening to this show in Jamestown, if you're listening to the show in Granger, Indiana, the home of Hawk Harrelson, if you're listening to New Carlisle, if you're listening to us in New Buffalo, Michigan, in Niles, Michigan, and for those of you listening going across the border, going through the tollway in Gary, come see me at South Bend.
Get at us.
Don't do that, Gary. So if you're one of those drivers, right, in that van, and the lady says, I just want to go to the boat. You know how that is. If you're one of those drivers I just want to go to the boat today, baby. You don't take them to Gary. Take them to South Bend on Saturday.
Yes. If you're driving that bus that stops on 87th, right off the Dan Ryan, bring it to South Bend.
Because all you're doing is taking them to the boat and back. Don't do that. Enough of taking them to Hammond and Whiting and Gary. Don't do that. Send them to South Bend. Let them see something new. For those of you that are transport drivers, and you know, I just want to get some cigarettes and go to Aldi's and just go to the boat, baby. No. Take them to South Bend on Saturday. Let them see something new. Four Winds Casino, South Bend, 3 to 5:30 Chicago time. Don't get it twisted. It's before the Notre Dame-Florida State game. Adam, Chris, and yours truly will be there. If you're in that area, even if you're in Chicago, South Side, just get on the tollway. Just come see us. Don't make any excuses.
I got to work.
You ain't got to work. You know you're going to the boat. But don't go to the boat. Go to the Four Winds Casino. For those of you who live in Hammond, you know what I'm talking about. You're trying to go to the convenient casino. No. See something new. It's a nice place. If it wasn't nice, I wouldn't say it.
Like, I know you don't really enjoy playing slots at the convenience store. Why don't you go to the casino where you can get a drink and actually enjoy yourself?
That's all I'm saying. So I'm calling all you out, Elkhart. I'm calling you out, Granger, Niles, Michigan. You're right there on the border. Buffalo, Fort Wayne. Come across if you have to. Sure, make a trip out of it. And if you're going to see Notre Dame, Florida State, just stop by as you go on your way to the game. So I had Four Winds Casino, South Bend. All right, Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Calling you out, Wolf Lake. I'm calling you in that area. I'm calling you out. All right. A man who's pantless. Yes. Pantless man falls through ceiling at Waffle House and is caught on video. I just saw the headline of the story earlier. I did not read into it. I will now. Alabama police say that they are looking for a man who was caught on video falling through the ceiling of a Waffle House and then shoving customers as he ran out of the restaurant while pantless, if you pardon the expression. Yeah, we realized there's a lot to unpack there in that sentence, so we break it down for you. So, a police officer, Wesley Glenn Bost, 27, of Birmingham, was attempting to break into an Alabama Waffle House located on U.S. 72. Bost was caught on surveillance video going into the Waffle House's bathroom and tying his jeans to the door in an attempt to keep it locked. He reportedly broke the bathroom sink and toilet while he was trying to climb up the ceiling. As Bost attempted to try to make his way through the restaurant, customers watched as part of the ceiling appeared to cave in, causing debris to rain down on several tables. The pantless man then leaps up and fights his way through several patrons and staff as he flees for his exit. You went through the ceiling of Waffle House, what, to rob the place of bacon and hash browns?
The video is wild because, like, he falls through the ceiling and then without hesitation just starts fighting people. Like, these people don't know what just happened. Like, he fell on their table, and then he just starts fighting them, and it runs out the door. It's like, wait, what just went on there?
That is just amazing. What is he doing? All right. Kansas City, Missouri. He's like a dog. Owner of a 7-foot alligator found in home vows to get his pet back. Animal control officers removed a 7-foot alligator from a Kansas City home Wednesday during an eviction. He had his own way of saying hi to people, Sean Casey said. That's not from the old Detroit Tigers, is he? It's not that Sean
Casey. The slugging left-handed.
Not him, right? They're not big, ferocious animals like people think. They have personalities. Sean Casey said when officials showed up Wednesday morning to evict him, he had just minutes to get out of his home near 55th and Phelps. Casey said the house belonged to his grandmother, who currently lives in a nursing home. I don't have anything good to say about the man, so I probably shouldn't say anything at all. But he's doing my family wrong, Casey told WDAF. The creature was 15 to 18 inches long, if you pardon the expression. He first got him 4 years ago. So he's got a 15, 18-inch creature in his home.
I mean, that's kind of scary.
No,
don't you think?
He should brag about it.
I mean, be careful with those Snapchat filters, though, sometimes.
I mean, an alligator for a pet, man, come on.
You know how off-base that is? Alligators are actually some of the dumbest animals. They do not have personalities. They just see things and bite them. They don't even try to hunt things. Dumb. This guy's probably not very smart either, though.
Isn't Kansas City a little bit more metropolitan than that to have an alligator? Well, I guess...
Is it, though?
No?
The Kansas side or the Missouri side?
That's a good point.
Oh, you said the Kansas side?
Or the Missouri side?
Kansas City, Missouri, right?
I think you did say Missouri, yeah.
Yeah, Kansas City, Missouri.
I'm going to still say it's Missouri, so.
Kansas is more metropolitan.
Small downtown. Once you get outside of the downtown, though.
I told you, I guess I told you guys a Kansas story I went to. I told you those stories.
Uh-huh.
How the women there were just like, nice to see you, and they were curtsying in front of me. It's just like, what? Like,
that'd be so awkward.
Yeah, it was such a...
Did you bow then?
I just thought I was in the sunken place. I was completely... weren't you here for this show, Davis? Yeah. Davis, I mean, yeah, it's so sunken place in outside of Topeka. Just weird.
I don't know if I remember that one. I remember the one when you went for the family reunion.
That's the one.
You stopped at the... Okay, yeah, same story.
Same story. Weird. Don't understand these people. All right, Eric.
All right. We're going to go across the pond to the Netherlands, where a 69-year-old nice Dutch man wants to legally change his age to 49. The 69-year-old TV personality has asked a court in the Netherlands to approve his request for a new birthday that would officially make him 49. Radelband says with all these things with people getting new freedom. So with the freedom of choice, choice of name, freeness of gender, I want to have my own age. I want to control myself, he said on Thursday. He wants it because when he asks for a mortgage, for example, he'll get more money if he's younger. He says if I go on Tinder, then I get women from 68 to 69, and he doesn't want that. He wants younger women on Tinder.
Put that on the poll at ESPN 1000. Would you change your age if you could, yes or no? I don't think I'd change my age. I think I'm good.
Like, you're not actually... The reason he says 49 is because the doctor says he's got the health of a 49-year-old. So he feels he should be allowed to be treated as an actual 49-year-old.
When he's actually...
Almost 70.
70?
Yes. He goes into, like, ageism. It's like, it's quite clear that elderly people have a smaller chance of getting a job than younger people. That's just one element he's realized in his later ages. He says that he'll even give back his Social Security that he's getting because he's old enough to get Social Security, so then that it'll actually save the Netherlands money.
That's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yes.
It really is. If you go back in the archives of Twilight Zone, there's an episode like that where an old man goes to this, this age building where he's like, oh, I'd love to be younger again. He becomes younger, but has to realize that his wife is 85. He's young and virile. He's 25 looking, but the wife's still old.
So
the wife couldn't go through the whole thing. So the guy went back into the ageism, I guess, building, and so he went back to be old again. So he went from being young to old to young to old again.
So being old and in love is better than being young and lonely.
There you go. Very well said.
Absolutely.
There you go. Hallmark card, Eric. All right, Sean, what do you have?
Well, Hood, maybe art will imitate life coming up. Our girl, Mary Jane Paul, had a child today.
Yes.
Congratulations to Gabrielle Union and Dwayne Wade as they were able to have a baby girl via a surrogate. They made the announcement on social media today, and they said, "We are sleepless and delirious, but so excited to share that. Our miracle baby arrived last night, November the 7th, via surrogate. Welcome to the party, sweet girl." Of course, we know that the 46-year-old did try to have a child naturally, but had suffered several miscarriages. So congratulations to Chicago's own Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union, and maybe Mary Jane Paul will have a child on the show now.
Yes, you're from the TV show Being Mary Jane on BET. I'm a big fan of that show. So, and Gabrielle Union, my Instagram partner, my Instagram friend.
Yes.
We go back and forth and talk NBA. So I'm very happy for them. It's something that she's always wanted.
It is.
And so it's great. So Dwayne Wade, another child. Another child for Dwayne. Well, I tell you, someone's got to roll out of there and be an NBA player. He's got a lot of, you got a 5-man rotation right now.
Hey, he's got that girl, though. Karma is a, it caught up to him.
It's what? Karma's what?
There you go. Pardon the expression.
Okay. Karma's what? Karma is what? And then you die.
Like a doctor when I rock the mic, you got to like
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
Report the guards job is in.
If you missed any of our show, it was an abbreviated show. We ask you to go to the Under the Hood podcast. That's where you can find our podcast, of course, on the Under the Hood page on ESPN.com as well. We can hear the podcast as we talked about the Chicago Bears and their matchup against the Lions. Also talked a little bit about the NBA with Nick Friedell and, of course, Tales from the Hood and so much more. We thank Nick Friedell for being with us. The executive producer of our shows is Sean Davis and Eric Ostrowski. Oh, by the way, tomorrow I'll be on 8 to midnight with Freddie Coleman. You got to listen to that on the ESPN radio app. So 8 to midnight. If you're looking for me, I'll put it out on Twitter and also on Facebook. I'll be with Freddie Coleman from 8 to midnight. For our entire crew, this is John the Hood. I'll talk to you tomorrow night. If not, Saturday, South Bend, Four Winds Casino from 3 to 5:30 for Chicago's College Tailgate right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000.